I'll do some stand-up comedy, Abe will do some preaching, and I'm really excited about it. The Weekend with AFA is a chance for our supporters to get better acquainted with the people and ministry you're supporting.
It's a Weekend with AFA, Thursday, October 2nd through Saturday, October 4th in Tupelo, Mississippi. Speakers will include Abraham Hamilton III, Jenna Ellis, Tim Barton, Tim Wildman, and more. Register at afa.net/weekend. That's afa.net/weekend.
Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues here on the American Family Radio Network for this Monday, August the 18th, 2025. I'm Tim Wildman with Ed Battagliano. Good morning, Brother Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
Fred Jackson.
Hi there, Tim.
You're my brother, too. Brother Fred and Brother Ed here to digest the news of the day.
Oh, we're digesting.
Are you?
Oh, yeah.
So at our age, that's a good thing to not have any issues with that.
That's right.
We got a couple of guests coming up this hour. Buddy Smith, he is a longtime colleague of ours here at American Family Association.
He was senior vice president for many, many years.
Yes.
Now he's vice president emeritus.
Right. He's an emeritus.
He's
is going to give us an update. The United Methodist Church, which almost everybody listening to us is familiar with that denomination. I grew up in it. My dad was a UMC pastor. Buddy Smith, our guest, he spent many, many years, decades in the United Methodist Church. Well, the United Methodist Church has now split, and there's a new denomination formed by the more conservative members of the Methodist group,
yeah,
for lack of a better term, the Methodist branch of Christianity. And they finally said that we can't go on with the liberalism that's taken over the denomination. By liberalism, I mean heresy.
Yes.
Okay.
That's right.
It's more than
Call it.
Yeah. So that it came to that. The denomination split, and the Global Methodist Church is a growing denomination in the U.S., and we're going to talk about that with him and what may happen to the United Methodist Church, what will happen to that denomination. And so we will speak to him, and then Koku Loco will be with us. He's the 1045. He is from Africa. He's visiting the U.S., and we've helped him put a radio station on in Africa, like American Family Radio.
Yes.
And it's impacting thousands of lives over there, and many we helped put that radio station on the air. And so it's African Family Radio. Not really. The name of it, but it would be cool, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah.
African Family Radio.
Get the gospel. Everyone needs the gospel.
Amen. So we'll get an update on that as well. First of all, the big news, internationally at least, Fred, is what's happening in Washington, D.C. today, right?
Yeah. In about an hour from now, the president of the Ukraine, Volodymyr Zelensky, is expected to arrive at the White House. He's actually been in town, D.C., for the last day and a half or so. But he's expected to arrive there, where he'll be briefed by President Trump on Trump's meeting with Vladimir Putin in Alaska on Friday. Now, the reports coming out of Alaska kind of set the scene. The meeting went longer than 2 minutes. Remember President Trump heading into that Alaska summit said, it may only last 2 minutes. I may walk away if I don't get a good attitude out of Putin. Apparently got a good attitude. The meeting went in Alaska went almost 3 hours. So we have this now summit going on in Washington today. Now, Zelensky and Trump have invited other European leaders to be part of this meeting today. Macron of France is there. Starmer of UK is there. Italian premier is there. They got four or five of major European leaders are going to be part of this meeting at the White House today. So lots of speculation going on as to what Trump was told by Putin, what he demands in order to end this horrible war. Now, a big player in all of this is Special Envoy Steve Witkoff, who has been meeting with the Russians over the last couple of weeks, has a setup to the Alaska summit. This is what he's saying heading into this meeting. Cut number one.
We moved the Russians significantly past where we thought they were going to end up. Now, I had six separate sessions with President Putin before this, and I thought that we had some measure of success, but this was epic, what we achieved. I think that we are a whole lot closer to eliminating death on the battlefield in Ukraine and Russia.
Well, and that's the big question is, okay, what is Putin demanding? Reports indicate that he wants some more turf in the eastern part of Ukraine, that perhaps in exchange for that, he has agreed to some kind of national security group with military people from Europe, perhaps even others, being involved in a security measure. It's going to come down to what Zelensky is demanding on his side today. Now, there have been a lot of coverage over the weekend. You know, Margaret Brennan at CBS, she had Secretary of State Marco Rubio in, and they had a bit of a confrontation because she was making assumptions as such as, well, President Trump didn't get a ceasefire, therefore that meeting in Alaska was a failure. Rubio did not like that. Cut number two.
Any meetings we've had
down.
Since then?
Oh, no, I know, and I was just up in Alaska watching the one with then. Vladimir Putin where a red carpet rolled
no,
out.
No, but
it was
Zelensky. We've had
different.
More meetings. We've had one meeting with Putin and like a dozen meetings with Zelensky. So, but that's not true. They're not coming here tomorrow to keep Zelensky from being bullied. They're coming here tomorrow because we've been working with the Europeans. We talked to them last week. There were meetings in the UK over the previous weekend.
And they said President Trump was going
to
demand a ceasefire.
As early as Thursday. No. But you said that they're coming here tomorrow to keep Zelensky from being bullied. They're not coming here tomorrow. Oh, this is such a stupid media narrative that they're coming here tomorrow because Trump is going to bully Zelensky into a bad deal. We've been working with these people for weeks on this stuff. They're coming here tomorrow because they chose to come here tomorrow. We invited them to come.
Ed?
Well, this, I more and more love Marco Rubio. He is sharp, sharp. He knows, he understands our country, the Republic. More importantly, he understands foreign policy. The guy's as much of an expert as I've heard in years on these kinds of issues. And I like the fact that he is going to push back with these media narratives. Now, I'm just going to say I've been reading about a lot of this over the weekend. I feel for the Ukrainians. They have been attacked. Russia has taken their territory. I've been reading about what's in the so-called Donbas region, that part of the east and the southeast of their country. Lots of important minerals. Coal is huge. It's their industrial base. I've read that if they surrender this, give this up to Russia and it doesn't come back to them, it could affect their economy by like 30%. It's also part of the wheat-producing section of the country. Not all of it, but a pretty good chunk of it. So and I think this is why Zelensky is demanding that Russia leave the country because this is such, first of all, it's been taken from them. Tens of thousands of Ukrainians have died defending it. It's important to their economic future. And so I certainly understand where Zelensky is coming from and the Ukrainians who support him. But I don't think Russia is going to surrender that territory. There's no reason why they should. They've lost close to a million deaths in terms of Russians who have died and been injured in this war. What they did was terrible. They've changed borders using violence. They've changed the borders between the two countries. They're taking important territory from another country. The Russians are not good guys in this, but there's no reason for them to leave what they've taken. Well, and I don't know what you could offer them to make them do it.
What was the story about the Russians taking Ukrainian children?
I heard Mark Levin talking about it over the weekend. They took, I think, 25,000 Ukrainian children from these lands where they invaded, and they've sent them back to Russia to be raised as Russians.
They kidnapped them?
Essentially, yeah. They took them. I don't know. I don't know why that is a part of what they're doing. Is it because their birth rate is so low? Now they're going to give.
I tell you, I don't know. I don't know. I don't. Who has the answers to this this dilemma? It's a dilemma, and there's something about seeing. I mean, Vladimir Putin and Russia invaded Ukraine, right?
Yeah,
that's correct.
Now they have their reasons why they did that. But now they're just bombing the blankety blank out of Ukraine, and Ukraine's been putting up the best fight they can, given the resources they have.
They've done well against that.
Here we are 3 years, and Russia still hasn't taken over Ukraine. I don't know what's going to be told to – I don't know what's going to happen today. You would think meetings like this would already be preset in terms of what they will be – faced with and they'll be agreeing to. I'm talking about with Zelensky and some of the European leaders being in Washington, D.C. to meet with President Trump. I would be surprised if everything isn't already preset, if they're going to get in there and do some back and forth negotiations and hopefully not get into shouting matches between the Trump administration and...
Part of the dilemma is What are the options for Europe or the United States? If Russia says we're not giving up the territory we've taken, okay, they took Crimea in 2014. We're not giving up the territory we've taken. Now, Ukraine, what else do you want? Well, so how do you get Russia to leave? You'd have to have NATO and the U.S. attack Russia to drive them out militarily. And we're not going to do that because once you do that, you risk a nuclear exchange.
But I don't think Zelensky's asking for that. He's just asking for arms.
No,
right?
No, that's true. And we're apparently going to sell arms to NATO, and then NATO is going to make a deal for Ukraine to have those weapons. But the point is, I don't think Ukraine can push Russia out either.
That's right.
With whatever weapons they get. Now, I could be wrong.
It's a stalemate, isn't it? Basically been a stalemate for him?
Well, I think Zelensky he's talking tough heading into this meeting. But I think he's going to have to give on Donbar.
That is a region that borders Russia that
yes.
is Ukrainian.
Yes. He's going to have to give on that. And then Putin, I understand, is agreeable, if he gets what he wants, is agreeable to a NATO security force, which is why a lot of these NATO country leaders are there today.
Okay.
And if you believe Rubio, who says he's been meeting with these people, apparently they're in agreement with that, of being part of a security force, so that Putin doesn't turn around 6 months from now and continue the war.
Would there be any conditions, like Russia has to return the children, the Ukrainian children, back to their homeland?
I haven't heard that coming out of the meeting in Alaska on Friday. I haven't heard that particular thing.
Okay.
We had the letter from Melania Trump that made some news on the weekend. She wants the kids back.
Yeah. And the estimates, by the way, are all over the map. There's some people saying 700,000 children have been taken, but most official kind of international figures puts it around 25,000. I'm not saying that the lower number makes it okay. I'm just saying the numbers have been all over the map. This security force and a kind of a NATO-style guarantee of protection for Ukraine is something. But you wonder if Putin is saying, okay, that'd be fine because they've got what they wanted.
Yeah.
And then they're not going to return it.
And I think if God forbid, there is a repeat of what happened at the White House meeting several months ago, if Zelensky gets his back up and says, no, I'm not going to agree with that, and he storms out again, or Trump kicks him out,
yeah,
whatever the case may be, then I think Trump's attitude's going to be, okay,
we tried.
I'm wiping my hands of this one.
Yeah. Listen, there's no way that Russia, I don't think, there's any way Russia could beat NATO in a war. Okay?
No.
But the problem is Russia is a nuclear power. I think they may have the same number of nukes, perhaps. Now, there's other countries in Europe that have nuclear weapons, France and Great Britain and Germany. But nobody wants to see nuclear weapons used. And the only way to drive the Russians out is to drive them back into Russia and maybe enter Russia, and then you risk
nukes. Well, okay, y'all, if I can use a good Southern expression, y'all help me here. Okay, I wouldn't say devil's advocate, but I'm gonna play dumb, okay? Which is not hard for me. I've done that many times in my life, intentionally and unintentionally.
Right.
All right. So why didn't Trump just say to Vladimir Putin, "You need to get your forces out of Ukraine, quit abducting children, quit threatening the world, and behave"? That's what I got to say to you, Vladimir. Now, what would have been wrong with that?
Well, there'd be nothing wrong with saying it.
But why didn't Trump say that?
Because, when you do that, when you imply a threat, then Putin says, okay.
But he's threatening Zelensky.
Huh? Well.
But basically.
Who, Trump, you mean?
Yes. Please don't misunderstand me. Yep. I'm pro-Trump. Okay, I'm pro-America. Right. I think Trump has the best interest of. He wants peace. I believe that.
I do.
But to me, and I know there are people who say Zelensky is corrupt and I don't know, all these, you hear all these things.
Sure.
We need to just abandon Ukraine and let them be sucked up by Russia. That's none of our business. I understand that. Okay. I don't view it that way necessarily. I think Zelensky is to be admired in terms of his tenacity. Here's a guy who has stood up to one of the world's greatest war machines. For 3 years, he's held him at bay from taking over his country. Now, he's been a leader. Obviously, his men have fought valiantly. But it seemed like to me, everybody's just looking at him going, hey, you need to surrender half your country, man. What's wrong with you? Why don't you do that? And he's like going, we're fighting for our very life and our country. Our children have been abducted. Our homes have been bombed. We've been pillaged. And you guys are looking at us like it's all up to us. Right. Don't you have any principles of right and wrong? That's what I would say the Ukrainian people are viewing this as.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I have no problem
with Trump's hamming it up.
I
say hamming it up. When Trump's rolling out the red carpet for Vladimir Putin and they're seen just joking and laughing, and while this guy's taking the children of the Ukrainians, don't you see how they would feel that what side is America on?
Absolutely.
Okay.
But at the end of the day, I know you hate that expression. Okay. What I just said, when the final chickens come home to roost, Russia is sitting on 20% of Ukrainian soil with their military dug in. It's important territory for Ukraine's economic future, and nobody has a way to push them out or to get them out without NATO and the U.S. going to war with Russia. And I'm guessing that's what Putin was banking on all along. NATO is not going to get in. Nobody in the West wants to get into a war. The U.S. was in wars for 20 years. They're reading the attitude of the American people. I'm talking about Putin. And so they're saying, we're taking it and we can't, no one can stop us and we're not giving it back. And now you've got to decide, well, what next? And I think what Trump's doing is he's telling Zelensky there is no what's next.
He knows that.
And you think Zelensky?
Yeah, he knows. He's known that for, he's not going to, I don't know that he'll do that. Although I don't know why he would be meeting with Trump if he doesn't, if he's not going to do what Trump wants him to do, which is give up, what, a third of his country?
Well, it's not quite a third, but it's, I think it's been described as like 20%, but it's really important. Now, I'm looking at the map. Now, what this does is I'm not excusing what Putin did. It means that there is now a buffer zone and nobody from the West can invade through Ukraine into Russia. But I don't think that's primarily why Russia took this. I think they took it because they wanted access to the Black Sea and they wanted all that coal and all those minerals and the wheat fields.
Well, we'll see what happens today. I don't know if Zelensky will agree. It seemed like to me he wouldn't be in Washington if he wasn't ready to agree to whatever Trump says. Whatever Trump worked out was with Putin, which we don't know exactly what that was.
Well, either that or he wants the European leaders to say, he wants to be able to tell the European leaders, look, I tried to talk Trump out of this thing he wants us to do, but we didn't get anywhere. And then he turns to European leaders and says, please give us weapons. We're going to keep fighting.
And that's the bottom line. I mean, Trump going in, he says he just wants the killing stopped. I mean, but he's been giving, thousands are dying on both sides every week.
Why didn't Trump have a red carpet for Zelensky meeting? I mean,
he's had him in the White House 2-3 times.
I know, but it just, I don't know.
It didn't look good. When he and Putin met on the red carpet, that's symbolic of, well,
roll out the red carpet.
Roll out the red carpet. That doesn't look good because, as far as I can tell, Putin is a dictator.
I see things a little bit different than a lot of my fellow conservatives on this in terms of the way Zelensky's been treated. Now, I know people say, well, he's got a whole bunch of money from the U.S., and that's true under Biden administration. But
American politicians have a lot of money, too.
Yeah.
You know, people, and now maybe Zelensky is corrupt. But I don't hold the money against them unless we're going to hold Nancy Pelosi, you know, for all her money.
All right, next story, Fred.
Well, let's have a little bit of good news before we go to the break.
Okay.
Costco, one of the huge retailers in this country, they have agreed that they will not dispense the abortion pill Mifepristone at its U.S. pharmacies, a decision hailed by pro-life advocates as a significant victory.
Mm-hmm. This is really big.
It is. Absolutely. For them to do this, and they've been known to have very liberal leanings in their upper establishment.
Right.
And for them to agree to do this, as Ed says, it's pretty big news.
Yeah. Yeah, this is good news. Costco, they're not going to sell the abortion pill.
Yeah.
And you're right. We congratulate them. We thank them for that. And also, we had a part to do. We had a role to play in that. American Family Association did. So it's a victory for our team, so to speak, and for the life issue altogether. So, yeah. And, you know, Costco's, as you say, one of the largest retailers in America. They're right up there with
Sam's.
Sam's. We don't have one here where we are, Costco, but they're much like a Sam's. Retail, right?
Very
right.
Similar.
They have like comparable memberships and stuff.
Memberships,
And you get access to the big box store. Now that you talked, someone mentioned something about they're traditionally very liberal because they're based, I think, out of Seattle or somewhere in Washington State. So I got to be honest, I was surprised that they did this, but celebrate it.
Well, there are seven conservatives in Seattle, so maybe they, you know what I'm saying? Maybe
my
they work for Costco.
My sister and her husband are two of them. She told me as soon as her husband retires, he's like a foot surgeon in the military or something. They're getting out of there. They said these crazies drive us crazy.
That's a beautiful city, though.
It is.
Naturally. It sits there.
It's beautiful state.
Is it the Puget Sound? Is that how you pronounce it?
Puget Sound, yep.
I've been there.
Mm-hmm.
And the Space Needle and
Mount Rainier.
Yeah. Beautiful, beautiful place, Seattle, Washington. All right. We'll be back in a couple of minutes. We're going to talk to The United Methodist Church is sliding downhill while the Global Methodist Church is climbing uphill, spiritually speaking. We're going to talk about that when we get back from the break.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stern. Stand by for news and commentary next. Vacation Bible School may be old school, but it's still very popular among kids across the Fruited Plain. CBN News reports nearly 3 million kids attended VBS at Southern Baptist churches over the summer, some 70,000 making a personal decision to follow Christ. Vacation Bible School, a week-long affair hosted by churches featuring fun adventure themes for kids, along with arts and crafts, singing, and lots of recreation. Many churches turn snack time into an art form. You know, when I was a kid, I got to double dip. I went to my family's Baptist Church VBS, then I attended my grandparents' VBS at the Methodist Church. Now, the Methodist had a lot better snacks. Almost switched denominations as a second grader because of that. The surge in VBS attendance could be a sign that more young families are now returning to the traditions of our faith. And the best part, kids actually want to get up early to go to VBS. Public school, yeah, not so much. I'm Todd Stearns.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim, Ed, Fred, now Buddy Smith joins us. Good morning, Buddy.
Good morning, Tim.
Buddy has worked here for, how long? You worked here longer than I have. Well, about as long as I have, hadn't you, before you retired.
That's right.
Yeah, three decades,
yeah.
Right?
Yes, indeed. 32 years before I kind of part-time retired. I appreciate you letting me hang around, though.
Absolutely. Now, you served as a United Methodist pastor, right?
Yes.
How many years?
A long time. Matter of fact, just like your dad.
Did you say too long?
Yeah. I was actually like your dad. Believe it or not, they appointed me here to AFA. And they didn't have
that,
any say-so
churches,
over.
Right? You served as a pulpit pastor.
Yeah, and I served as a pulpit pastor for about 15 years.
Yeah, 15 years.
Sure did.
Okay, so in the United States, if you look at our history, obviously the Christian religion has dominated since our inception. All right, and if you look at the 20th century and the last half of the 20th century, if you were to look at the Christian religion, I'll use that term, in the United States, in terms of numbers, you have the Roman Catholic Church, and they have an unfair advantage because if you're born, you don't have to convert. If you're born in a Catholic family, they count you. Am I right, Ed?
I think that's probably
that's
right.
That's
yeah,
true.
Yeah, I think it is.
Okay, so I'm just teasing a little bit here. I'm just saying, okay, if you look at the numbers, Catholics, and then as far as Protestant denominations go, you had the Southern Baptist Church. They're called the Southern Baptist Convention,
right?
Mm-hmm. And then under that, and I know some Southern Baptists saying, hey, we're not Protestant, we're something else. I don't know. Go back to John the Baptist, or some of them claim that, right? So, but I'm talking about non-Catholic, okay, Christians, and that is Southern Baptist. And then right under that was the United Methodist Church. The United Methodist Church came into existence in the 60s, right?
68.
The merging of what?
Right. EUB,
United Brethren?
United Brethren and another one.
United, and Methodist?
Yeah.
It was just called the Methodist and the United Brethren. Thus, they put it together, United Methodist, and they became the second largest Protestant denomination in America and had churches all over the country. So I'd say that to set the backdrop here.
Right.
Because the United Methodist Church was an evangelical. Mm-hmm. By that, I mean they were basically a Bible-believing denomination that you grew up in, that
I grew up in. That's right.
Something happened along the way in the started in the 70s, maybe even prior to that, 80s and 90s.
Yes.
What happened, buddy?
Era. What happened was the seminaries all of a sudden began to teach this so-called progressive or regressive, we might better label it, theology, which basically just they forgot their Bible. They lost their Bible and began to have these other ideas that they thought were better and smarter than God's revelation.
Mm. That happened, and then that started filtering down to the...
It infiltrated the seminaries, then the hierarchy of the church, the bishops. And so the problem there was with these bishops in the United Methodist Church, they are elected for life.
Like federal judges.
So, yes. So they get this control and they get this power. And so if it's their idea that they got a better idea than the Bible, then there are no checks and balances. They're not accountable.
Elected for life, that's a terrible idea.
Oh, it is. Huh? There's a judicial court. But the problem with there is, again, no, there's no accountability to Scripture. And so you just got, leadership off the rails.
So this battle between the what I would call the Bible-believing Methodists,
yes,
and these more progressive liberal Methodists,
yes,
that just went on through the 70s and 80s and 90s, 2000s, and finally it came to a head.
It did.
About 5 years ago?
It did.
What happened?
That's right. Well, what happened was, even though the book of doctrine, we call the discipline, still had a biblical truth there around Orthodox Christian beliefs, by that time, like you say, tracing back 50 years ago when it all started, all of a sudden it comes to a head. And you've got these lawbreakers in the church that are just ordaining homosexuals.
Open homosexuals.
Yes.
They were promoting that.
Yes, absolutely. And so there was just, no one to reel them in. They just did what they wanted to do, and there were no consequences. And so all of a sudden, you've got a church here that's just really no longer a church in terms of what the New Testament defines as what a church is really supposed to be.
So, one other question, then I'll let you. So what happened?
So
you got this divide now, and somebody came up with an official way to separate, mm-hmm. right?
That's right. So thankfully, and of course, through the years, we're talking these 50 years or so, there were renewal movements
that
arose, and the United Methodist system, your dad was a critical part of a couple of those.
Right.
And while they made a little headway, just again, because of the seminaries were poisoned, just toxic. And then you had these bishops unaccountable to anyone, and especially to the Scripture. And so finally, it just ran off the road completely. And so thankfully, God has raised up a new Methodist denomination called the Global Methodist Church. It happened in 2022, and it's amazing what's happened, and it's still happening. What just happened before our eyes was all of a sudden this implosion of the United Methodist denomination, and because of what's called a trust clause in the United Methodist Church, going all the way back to Wesley, believe it or not, when they tied the property of the local church to the denomination. Now, that was done initially for some control, not of just so we can tell you what to do if it's not biblical, but to keep the doctrinal focus on Orthodox Christian beliefs. And so, but then, when the church lost its moorings and lost its focus about the gospel and decided to become something else rather than the Church of Jesus Christ, then you've got trouble. You got real trouble. And so, but what happened was because so many churches were revolting about the heresy that was being spread in the church, the denomination basically became a bank and provided a way out and said, well, okay, you want to leave? We'll let you leave, but you're not leaving without writing a check because we own the property. So some churches wrote some serious checks. They paid the price. And but the good news of that is they're now out from under the thumb and control of the United Methodist Church, and it's a new day.
And personally, I'll just make this comment, and then I want to ask you one other question here, buddy.
Yeah.
I think the United Methodist Church did that, in other words, trying to get the money out of these churches that wanted to leave, because the United Methodist Church was shrinking in terms of adherence because of the liberal turn.
Exactly.
They could read the tea leaves, so to speak, and they wanted to try to get some money to weather that decline.
I agree.
And I think that they were trying to get that cash in the bank.
Yeah.
But now you have been selected for a position in our area of
the
Global Methodist Church, right?
Yeah.
Tell the listeners a little bit about
that. I have. And it came as a real surprise. I may be more surprised than anyone, I guess, for a couple of reasons. And by the way, this would have never happened with me in the United Methodist Church because of my beliefs about the inspiration of the Scripture.
Yes, you believe the Bible.
And because of my history as an outspoken evangelical Christian.
Right.
I mean, I would just not...
Yeah, you're a pariah.
Yes. Yes. So something of a surprise. And I'll have to say that I think my opportunity to serve in this capacity comes to some maybe large degree because, Tim, my history of leadership here with AFA and the Global Methodist Church has a great appreciation for AFA and for what we have done and stood for through
this. So you'll be a presiding elder.
A presiding elder. And so what?
Is that a lifetime appointment?
No, thankfully not. Not sure how long it is for... 74 years old, we know it won't be very long.
Oh, so, man.
Anyway.
Buddy doing an honest self-analysis here of life. Okay.
But the beauty of it is, and here's the joy of it, my role is in the Amory District, which is comprised of 16 churches, 14 pastors, and I'm basically an overseer over those churches. You know, it's all about encouraging them to be the body of Christ, to be faithful to the Lord and proclaim the gospel and make disciples. And there's just a new and a fresh wind of the Holy Spirit blowing through this denomination. I can't begin to tell you the excitement. And, you know, in this small district of our Mississippi West Tennessee Conference, you know, we do have some smaller rural churches, but we also have, you know, churches in Columbus, First Methodist, and Starkville, and West Point, in our area here that are just...
The Mississippi towns you're talking about.
Yes, Mississippi towns. And they're really, really flourishing. God's hand is really upon them. And here are a couple of things that I think checks and balances the Global Methodist has put in place. First of all, for the bishops, and we've had some good ones in the Global Methodist, and we also have term limits for them. So they can serve 2 6-year terms, and if they're still of age, they go back and be a pastor again to serve out their ministry. Also, first and most important, we believe the Holy Bible is God's revelation. And so that's first and foremost, and we have seminaries, about 9 of them approved. Wesley Biblical, one of my favorites because I'm on the board there, you know, one of those approved seminaries where, you again, just a belief in the Scripture and in scriptural holiness and the tenets of Methodism. And, you know, there's no property hold on these churches. Each church holds and owns their own property. And then, of course, just such a focus on making disciples and growing the church and growing the kingdom.
Well, we're talking about the United Methodist Church is been hemorrhaging members now for a couple of decades, maybe 3 decades, because often people would cite because they're going so liberal,
right,
and to the point of being heretical.
And so.
It's sad to say, I grew up in the United Methodist Church.
It Buddy
was
sad.
A pastor there. Many of the people listening right now grew up in the United Methodist Church, and it's sad to say. However, so that church is dying, Yes. But the God is raising up new churches, new denominations, yes, like the Global Methodist Church, right, which we're talking about here.
That's right.
Discussing here this morning, which is on the rise. And I don't know what, I don't, again, I don't know for the life of me. Well, I think I do know the answer to my own question, but just looking at it, if you were taking the spiritual aspect out of these church denominations and you were just saying, okay, these are businesses.
That's right.
Okay. So what happened to these mainline Protestant denominations? Right. It's like they have a death wish, like a suicide pact that they've entered into with the devil.
That's right.
And so they, these historic Christian denominations that helped form America, and then I'm talking about, I don't know if I should name names. We've already mentioned the United.
I'll name them.
Well, the Presbyterian Church USA.
Yes.
The Episcopal Church, yes, which they're down to like 27 people, I think.
Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.
Okay.
Elka. Right.
Those denominations, again, these are great historic denominations, yeah, in America, which because of their denying of biblical truth, mm-hmm, are people do not go to a church that doesn't believe in anything.
Right,
right, right.
They're certainly not going to write a check. People go to anything, whatever the call, but it better have a... It better have a purpose. It better have a mission. It better have a cause.
It needs to believe in something.
Yes. Believe in something.
Yes. Huh? Yes. And Satan is always at work, Tim, yeah, with trying to, you know, the Bible speaks a lot about apostasy, about a falling away,
right,
from,
right,
biblical truth and doctrine. Right. And Satan is just working overtime, and we've got to be alert.
Are you surprised how many Methodist United Methodist churches decided to write the check and, yes, leave the denomination? Were you surprised at this?
I was surprised, and I honestly...
Do you know the percentage?
Well, I know in this conference here in Mississippi, I think that percentage is at least 50% now.
Really?
And yes, and, you know, yes, I was very surprised, and I think the leadership United Methodist probably more surprised than all. I don't, you know, I think with the United Methodist, you, because of the seminaries, you had the clergy all kind of poisoned up with this stuff, but they had not really penetrated the pew, you might say, and as far as they, as deeply as they thought they had.
Yeah.
And so I think that's the surprise, because to leave the denomination, the way the United Methodist set up, there had to be a certain percentage of the congregation to vote to leave. And so,
right, then you got to be willing to surrender some land.
Yes.
Or money.
Exactly.
So it's some pain involved in that regard. You don't just walk away and say,
that's right,
you know.
That's right.
And anyway, by the way, when this started happening with churches, conservative Bible-believing churches leaving, yeah, the United Methodist Church, we found out what this was really all about. The UMC's 2024 General Conference,
yes,
so this last year,
right,
repealed its longstanding bans on LGBTQ clergy and same-sex marriage.
They did.
So that was what they wanted all along.
It's what they wanted all along, and their promises were always to the people in the pew. You know, that's just not going to happen, you know. And
listen, I just don't know how you can read the Bible,
no,
and say that homosexuality is compatible with scriptural,
no,
teaching.
No, it's clear.
It's just not
clear.
And that doesn't, right, mean God doesn't love LGBTQ,
that's
people,
right, that's,
and,
right,
we're all, as the saying goes, good, we're all sinners.
Whether, that's right.
Huh?
Yeah.
So that's also true, but the Bible, there are certain behaviors the Bible doesn't condone or conform or agree with.
Right.
And it lays them, you can't be sexually immoral.
Right.
Regardless of homosexuality, you can't live.
You can't enter the kingdom of heaven,
that's
let alone,
right,
belong to a church.
That's
adultery.
Right. Right.
You know, premarital sex is forbidden.
Right.
So there's all kinds of things that are forbidden.
By the way, I did want to mention that the apostate churches that were aligned, the United Methodist and aligned, yeah, with the UMC, were all in the West. The Methodist churches in Africa, for example, or right. Latin America or Asia, they were That's all right. biblically solid.
There were.
And in fact, I remember there were some African bishops who That's agreed right. to oversee in the early part of they this did. Exodus right, from did. The UMC. They agreed to act as bishops temporarily while this kind of they what we now know as the global Methodist
That's right.
church.
That's right.
They were helping them.
And many of those now are global Methodists. Yes. There are over 50 conferences now of the Global Methodist Church in the United States, and there are over 25 now globally.
Okay.
So
right.
the denomination, while the UMC, United Methodist, is imploding, the Global Methodist is exploding.
Right. Well, Buddy Smith's been our guest. He is a new, what is your role?
Presiding elder.
Presiding elder.
Of the Amory District.
Of the Global Methodist Church, which is a denomination that has sprung forward after the demise of the United Methodist Church. As I know some people have been listening, the demise, what do you mean? Well,
spiritual demise.
Yes.
Demise. All right. Thank you, buddy.
Thank you, Tim.
Appreciate it.
Joy to
be with
you.
We wish you the best in overseeing 14 pastors and 16 churches. I don't know why.
By the way, are you still
prayers appreciated?
You do preach at churches. Are you going to keep preaching?
I do. Yes, indeed. Okay. I'll have an opportunity to preach in some of these churches. So
right.
look forward to that.
Ed, you need you to oversee 14 pastors and 16 churches.
No, I don't.
you're retired. You need something to do.
Are you hinting at something, Tim?
Yeah. Oh man. All right. Thank you, buddy.
Thank you.
You're listening to Today's Issues. We're going to wait till 11:05. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Well, the Southern Baptist Church, many of our folks listening to us right now, they went through their own struggles, I guess, between the conservatives and the, I don't know, moderates or liberals. Remember that with Adrian Rogers?
Late 70s, early 80s.
Okay.
Remember that, Fred?
Yeah, Adrian Rogers, that's how he became a national figure. He went in there and fought on behalf of those for the authority of Scripture. And turn it around.
And to protect their seminaries.
Yes.
It's always the way, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, that's if you don't stick to the Bible,
yeah.
and if you don't uphold the Bible as you train new leaders, you're going to go the way of the UMC, the Episcopal Church, et cetera.
Yeah.
That's just what's going to happen.
I heard once, and you know, you guys get your reaction to this. I heard in order to get some of these schools, seminaries, in order to get accreditation, they have to have, you know, you have to have a master's degree, a PhD, whatever the case may be. And they go out and they look for what they consider the best, but the best may have graduated from Harvard Theological School. So they said, well, he's only teaching English or whatever the case may be. And they bring them in, but they start to influence the students. It is just a reminder that, you know, that little bit of
leaven
can really destroy the whole lump if you're not careful. Now, this happens over a long period of time.
Right.
But it's also the other thing. I think there's a philosophy out there. In order to win the world, we have to become more like the world.
Yeah.
No, that's not. I understand that. You're right. That is what... That is the deception.
Yeah.
But that's not the reality.
No.
I'll say this too. Yeah. It's just you would think, as I said, back to the business analogy, you would think, okay, how can we get more customers? Mm. Well, we offer good products and we offer things that are valuable to people. Well, if you apply that to the church world, if you have a church that doesn't believe in anything, really, nothing absolutely, we've heard this, you know, Christianity is exclusive.
Yeah.
Either you believe Jesus is the Son of God or you don't. And
right.
That's a dividing line.
Yes.
Okay. But a lot of these mainline churches have tried to adopt a universalist view of while their name says Christianity, inside the pulpits, they've been saying, no, all roads lead to God.
Right.
Well, that isn't what Jesus said. So, which is it? It's got to be one or the other. And if you try to go with all roads lead to God, and you claim to be a Christian church, eventually you're going to lose all your members, and you're not going to be able to recruit any new members to your church because you're not proclaiming anything that people can sink their teeth into. Is that?
Yeah, I wrote an article probably 15 years ago for our monthly magazine. And folks, by the way, check out The Stand magazine. You can go to afa.net and sign up for it. But I wrote an article about the kinds of churches. This was in the early 2000s, where mainline denominations were shrinking dramatically, but evangelical churches were growing. And I wrote this article, and even sociologists said that what people are looking to when it comes to church are authoritative churches, not authoritarian, where you have leaders that are bullies. It was called authoritative churches, that people wanted to go to churches that believed in something and that to which they had to, that they were asked to give. And you're going to ask people to sacrifice? You're going to ask people to, you and Allison did this for years, taking nursery duty. You're going to ask people to sacrifice like that? It's got to be for a cause or something bigger than themselves. And that's what even sociologists recognized within growing churches. But churches that don't make demands, that don't say this is the
truth,
and this is false, those churches tend to shrink.
Yeah, because if you don't believe that in proclaiming the gospel of salvation, saving you from sin, death, and hell, then
just stay home on Sunday.
Yeah, you can find a thousand things to do with your time.
Right.
Right. All right, we'll be back momentarily with more of today's issues on the American Family Radio Network.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.